the guys from Ping, they've kind of shown me how much the equipment matters.
I just love that I can hit any shot I kind of want.
We're going to be able to tell some fun stories about what goes on here to help golfers play better golf.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Ping Proving Grounds podcast. I'm Shane Bacon with Marty Jurdson as always. And Marty, we've got not just one of the great guys in golf, one of the great golf names today as a guest.
Yeah, Seamus Power. It's awesome to have you on, and we're looking forward to kind of getting to know you a little bit more and sharing that with our guests.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. Yeah, looking forward to it.
All right, Seamus, I got to start with this. Initial thoughts on Johnson City, Tennessee when you got there. How did you go from Ireland to Johnson City, Tennessee?
Yeah, it was a funny one. So our coach, like Fred Warren, was definitely one of the first to like embrace international recruiting. Like, I think, you know, it's probably hard to get good U.S. recruits to go to Johnson City, but I didn't go on a recruiting visit, so I'd been to L.A. and Miami in my time in the U.S. So showed up there.
They say that's like the L.A. of Tennessee.
Yeah, it was something else, but it really is beautiful there. I was very lucky. So my team, my freshman year, I think it was my freshman or sophomore, was like it was an all GB&I team. So I knew guys that had been through it, and they were very helpful and stuff. But I think without that, it would have been a little more interesting. But it was still quite the culture shock. I mean, just the introduction to college sports, there's nothing like that, certainly in Ireland, probably nowhere else in the world. All that stuff was unbelievable. But it was, yeah, great experience and beautiful place. So it was nice.
So you were there for 4 years?
Yeah, I stayed all four, yeah.
So what was your journey like, you know, from your freshman year to your senior year, you know, from your own personal golf game progression standpoint?
Yeah, it was interesting for me because I came in like under the radar, but I actually had a very good freshman year for the most part. And then I had some like hit and miss stuff kind of my next couple of years. And then it was interesting, as I wasn't even sure about professional golf really until my senior year. I didn't play very well in the fall because I had knee surgery like the summer before my senior year, but played very, very well my last semester. And that was kind of the best I played in college. And that was kind of the thing that I saw enough to like, oh, I'll give professional golf a shot.
So right there, going into your final semester, in your mind, you were teetering. Were you favoring maybe not?
Yeah,
turning pro?
I wasn't sure. I mean, I was lucky enough to have, like, we had Reese Davies on there, who was like one of the best players in college golf. He was there my first year, and then there was Garrett Shaw, who was minimum 2 or 3-time All-American. He was our best player my second year, and then there was other really good players. So I'd never been the best player on our team, so I was looking at, you know, all these other guys. Like, we played against Georgia, and you were looking at a team, and you had, like, Russell Henley, Harris English, Hudson Swafford, Brian Harmon, and you're like, wow, so you're going to play against all these guys. So it was a little up in the air for me. It wasn't one that, like 16 knew where I was going to go with it.
Yeah.
I was later to golf, so kind of later learning all that side. So it was a little different, but I saw enough my senior year at least to give it a shot.
Yeah.
I saw that you said if you weren't playing golf, you'd be an accountant, which is hilarious.
I said that, I think, when I got my, like 10 or more years, I definitely wouldn't be. But I wasn't sure. I honestly don't know. It was one of those things I hopefully never have to know. But from being around and doing what I've done for so long, it would be tough now to go back to kind of, I feel like trying to get into something where you could still work for yourself, for some sort of business by yourself, would be the avenue I'd try to go down. But I had an accounting degree, so that was kind of easy. Well,
and you were like incredibly ranked as a racquetball player as a kid, is that right?
I was, yeah. I actually have a bronze medal from the Racquetball World Championships when I was like 12. Yeah, I was very wee. So it was kind of funny. My parents were, so I grew up in a very rural place in Ireland. My parents were huge in getting a community center built. And my dad was huge into handball, as an Irish sport, like not the throw kind of team one, hitting ball with your hand kind of one. But racquetball was taking off. So like racquetball ended up being the sport that got played in the kind of the handball court. And I loved it. Like I always had pretty good hand-eye coordination and just love racquetball. And yeah, we were very lucky. Kind of was taking off in Ireland, and I was kind of played at the right time and ended up going to Los Angeles a couple of times for world championships and kind of stuff like that. So it was a really cool few years, and yeah, absolutely loved it.
Since the popularity of like pickle and paddle have blown up, do you ever get into that at all?
My girlfriend and I started playing some like pickleball last year, but then I kind of had some hip issues, not because of that, just like through golf. So I haven't played much since, but yeah, it's amazing how popular it's gone. I haven't played paddle. But pickleball was fun. We only played a little bit, but it was really fun. And it seemed like everyone was playing at my gym in Vegas. Like, they changed out a couple of basketball courts to put in pickleball courts and all this stuff. But it's so popular. I'd like to play a little bit more, but now the hip's feeling better.
Have you got into that yet, Marty? Are you pickle paddle at all?
No, just dabbled. But I'm trying to get my kids into tennis. They're playing and taking tennis lessons, which is quite fun. Yeah. You know?
Tennis is hard.
I mean, with racquetball background and stuff, like tennis ever thing, ping pong a thing, I'm assuming you were good at that too?
When I was younger. So racquetball and tennis didn't match up that well because racquetball, you're hitting everything flat. And then you're trying to, when you're going into tennis, you're trying to change the grip and try to get like those top spinners going.
Yeah.
Difficult. Backhand side, I'd be okay. Forehand side, I kind of just... wasn't as good as I would like, but I mean I'm able to hit it fine. It's just trying to like hit the shots you'd like to hit or kind of.
Seamus, grown up in Ireland, what did you know? Obviously, you played a couple sports, but what did your season look like? I'm always curious about that. Like were you all golf in the summer? What'd you do in the winter? What other sports?
Yeah, when I got into golf, like it's strange looking back because you just play. I mean, I had friends that got into it, and we would play golf from. All day long in the summer. I mean, it gets bright at, I can't remember, like 4 or 5 in the morning. It's bright until 11 at night. So you could play all day long. But I wouldn't play much during the school year, maybe once on the weekend, because I didn't live close to a course. So the season would be like that. But honestly, it was kind of funny. Even when I started golf, it wouldn't have been my main sport. I would kind of work it in around. So we have Irish football. Yeah. We have a sport called hurling, which is like, it's nothing really sound like lacrosse mixed with field hockey and kind of thing. And then I played a lot of racquetball. Played a lot of different sports, played soccer for a while too, so it was kind of interesting. And yeah, I still like when I go home, there's my hurling and football coach, he said that's when I knew I was in trouble, when I started kind of all of a sudden planning like hurling and football around my golf. But it wasn't until I was probably 15-ish that I would play at more of a full season. Which is amazing. I go home now, and in the winter, I don't know how I ever played golf in the winter, but I did, and I loved it. And I just liked the challenge of it and started getting into it more and more. And then by the time I got to like 15, 16, kind of got picked for some panels. And then like you'd go and you'd do coaching panels so then you'd really be all season long. But you do have a shorter season. Like you could play in the winter, but it's, it's ball in hand everywhere and it's kind of miserable and frost delays.
In my trips over there to Ireland and anywhere in Great Britain and Ireland, there's not like great. It's not like over here where you have a perfect range and great practice facility. Did you have a range at all? I've been to a lot of courses that don't even have a range, or are you just playing all the time?
A lot of playing, but our driving range was on a probably 25 degree slope, and it was probably 200 yards long. And you're always
the ball above your feet or below your feet?
I mean, you could hit either end because it's not like a range. It was basically just a field.
Yeah.
So you could. That's the thing. If you were working on something. If you're cutting it too much, you go to the other end and hit that game. But it was interesting. You'd pick up all your own balls. It was totally different. Ranges aren't particularly big in Ireland. It's kind of funny. I don't know if it's, I'm not really sure. Like, you guys will just show up to take a couple swings and get on the first tee and off you go. Yeah, it's very different. So you'd be on the course a lot more. I mean, in the summer, you could play 2-3 rounds. You'd come in and you just had other. I was lucky. I was at a golf club that was a lot of juniors, and we would play so much golf. Looking back, it was crazy. But yeah, absolutely loved it.
Americans go across the pond and they have to work on flighting the golf ball.
Yeah.
Did you have to learn how to hit the ball up in the air?
I weirdly always had a higher ball flight. I always, when I was 16, 17, it always hit a little higher. And obviously, in the wind, you want to hit it lower. But I always found it easier to hit it lower when you need it to, rather than trying to hit it higher when you need it to.
Gotcha.
I was like, this will be fine. But you do have to learn different shots. But the biggest thing is like going from never playing Bermuda grass to go chipping on Bermuda grass is just, it's bizarre. It looks like a fine line and you hit it and it goes a foot in front of you. And that takes a little bit of time because it messes with your mind. Like, we obviously play a lot of shots around the greens. It's tight grass, but it's like, it's perfect to chip off. If you can clip it, it comes off exactly how you think it is. And all of a sudden, there's so many unknowns. And that was the biggest part to me. Was just figuring that out. And even on the fairway, like little climb the grooves or like it'll walk, like different things like that where you just wouldn't have seen before.
Well, you jumped right into the Bermuda in Tennessee probably, right?
Yeah, straight. Like it was bizarre. Yeah. It's
welcome
so,
to the States.
Yeah.
Here we go.
I was laughing. You're so naive growing up in Ireland. I'd never seen grass go dormant. I didn't know that was a thing.
Oh, yeah.
So my freshman year that fall, we got some hard frost, didn't go to the practice for a day or two, and then I go up to practice. And I immediately panic, call my coach. I think our driving range has been vandalized because it's started to go dormant. And it's like, I didn't know this was a thing. And it was like, it was the strangest thing. We grew up, people ask you what kind of grass, especially when I moved to college first. And I was like, I have no idea. Grass is grass. Like, we don't have different types. And all of a sudden it becomes such a thing. And, playing out here now, you have to be very aware of, you start to figure out what to do on certain ones and all that. But that was the funniest adjustment for me, and especially then coach like driving up in a panic thinking we've been vandalized, and he's looking at me like I'm an idiot. So it was an interesting introduction.
Seamus, in your time in college, you start working with Scott Sullivan, right?
Yep.
On just kind of introducing you to equipment optimization, some club fitting things. Yep. Tell us about like your first experience with Scott, with Ping, and some of those times in college.
Yeah, it was amazing. I mean, when I came to college first, I had a mixed bag of everything. I think I'd be terrified of them now, but like those small McGregor irons and like mixed bag of everything. I can't remember what putter. Yeah, so like Scott then comes in. He would always come. We have the Bank of Tennessee in like October, and Scott would like come in and do his like trip in around that. And it was just, I'd never really seen anything before. It was amazing. Even introducing it to like what you're looking for with launch and that sort of stuff. Yeah. Or, you know, before you're just kind of looking at it, I was going, oh, like, that looks pretty good.
Eyeballing it.
Yeah, I mean, that's all I would do.
I like that one.
Yeah, like, so all of a sudden you're being introduced to that. It was amazing. Like, I switched over to Ping, was it that fall or that spring? And I've been Ping ever since. It was just amazing, the everything, all the options, this and that. You know, like, I was, I guess, naive to all that. I'd be like, I don't like this one. So you just assume that you just get a driver from some like a different company, like that one's gonna be better, not realizing that, oh no, you can like tweak this to suit you, you can do this, you can do that. So it was amazing. And I was actually talking about it yesterday, like the fact that he was doing all that before the adjustable heads.
Yes.
Too, like, I don't know how many drivers he was squeezing in those club gloves, but yes, Scotty was great. Like it was amazing. It was amazing service, and it was just like, I was blown away. It's like 2 days later, like all this stuff starts showing up, and it's just all of a sudden like night and day difference. And like, he's going through everything from grip sizes to like shafts, all this kind of stuff, where I was very naive. Like, you just kind of, I don't know, you just kind of have clubs, and you either sometimes you liked us some more than others. You didn't really know why. So it was amazing. Yeah, it was an incredible service. Yeah.
Yeah. So you brought up how he was able to do that, you know, before the adjustable. So a lot of times we would actually like trim the ferrule and shim the shaft in, tilt it a little bit. And that's now actually what the adjustable hosel
does. That's what it does.
You know, it's kind of in there, just tilt it a little, and you can really fine tune things. And looking at your specs, You play all your woods in a custom, like, non-standard setting. Like, I think your driver's in the big plus, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So that's like adding 1.5 degrees.
Yeah, it is. So I like it's amazing. I was kind of missing it right, like, for like a little while, and then I put it in that big plus, and I feel like the face is looking at me more in that setting, and I like it a lot more. It's still only like 9.5 degrees, even in the big plus, but it just, the visually, it looks much easier. It's as funny as that is, it's just visually is the big thing for me. As soon as I put that in the dot, or even put if you gave me a 9.5 degree in the dot, it feels like that toe is kind of sliding away from me. And even like other people aren't going to see it, like, golf's a funny game for that. But yeah, I it's been a huge, huge change for me putting that big plus. And yeah, it's incredible the way you can do that. You can completely change how a club changes or plays.
You're a big minus guy, right? I mean, you're the opposite.
Yeah, I'm a 10.5, but I put it in the big minus.
Interesting.
Because I kind of want it, the face pointed just a little bit to the right. It's so fun to have those options, to have that individual preference to your eye, right?
It is, yeah, because I like to fade it, but I don't like to see the face.
Oh, I love that.
Because as soon as when the face starts getting numb, I feel like I was going to want to do that. Yeah. It's such a strange game for that. And sometimes it's, as soon as you see a club, you don't even realize the time, but like, it's somewhere deep down is telling you, your gut's telling you, we don't like the look of this one. And sometimes it takes you a little bit to kind of trust it. But yeah, it is amazing to have those options. I mean, you can just completely change how the ball flies, like distance it's going, everything basically. It's incredible now.
Seamus, your grips are interesting too, right? Plus 5 wraps in the bottom hand, is that right? Plus 2 at the top. Tell us how that kind of came to be.
Yeah, so this was CP was like, we were talking, because I got them re-gripped, and it's always an ordeal getting them re-gripped. There's a lot going on, but I don't have particularly big hands, but I think I just have like shorter fingers and bigger palms or something, someone told me. So I just had, regular mid-size grips, and I think it was like one of Bubba's clubs that was like sitting around when I was at the factory.
Exactly. It was like 7 under, wasn't it?
Yeah, a lot.
And I was just like, oh, that feels nice. So like, I was with CP, so he was like, oh, we'll build it up a little bit. And I think he would go like 1 or 2 reps, and I'm like, I could still go a little bit. And eventually, at the end of the day, like, he was like, so what is that? He was like, and they were like, it's all sorts. There's a black tape in there. There's like other stuff, but it feels amazing in my hands. Like, when I hold like a regular size grip now, I don't know how I ever was able to do it. Like, the biggest thing for me is, especially around the greens, I go up and down the shaft a lot, and I didn't like when I would go down near like the end of the grip, the club feel really small. I'm just kind of like a toy club. So I much prefer like it's just less tapered. So it just feels a little more similar when I go up and down the shaft a little bit. Yeah. So I liked it. It was something I hadn't really experienced with before. It was just it's something that I picked up and I liked, and it's been like that for a few years. So it feels amazing in my hand now.
In short iron shots, let's say 9-iron pitching wedge, you grip down when you
fly a lot of times ball? I do, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's when like it feels much more similar to what it does up at the top. So it's I like it. Like it's strange. Like so many people will like when to pick them up, like, oh, that feels better than I thought it would. I was like, I don't know what it is, but it definitely feels nice in my hand. Like it just, I'm not sure, it just feels comfortable, the size fits. So
yeah,
going with it.
Can we talk about the back-to-back aces at the Masters?
Yeah, for sure.
So the first one goes in.
Yeah.
You have a moment. Everybody goes nuts. Obviously, that's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
The second one's in the air. I mean, what's going through your mind?
It was the craziest. Like, it was on 7, I actually lipped out. Like, I got up to 7, and it hit the hole, and I was, like, this far from the hole. And then, so I was like, oh, that would have been cool.
It's like the most dialed ever, right?
Yeah. And then you get on 8, and we're waiting. And I played the previous year, and the pin's on the front, and this green just comes ripping back. So you're, like, trying to land it 30 feet past it. And as soon as it lands, you're like, I knew, like from last year, you kind of knew how it was breaking. I was like, oh, that's got a chance. And it just went in perfectly. And then, yeah, it was a crazy feeling walking down. And like that part of the par 3 course, it's so loud. It's where all the people are. It was amazing walking up there and get to 9T. And like, you know, there's people like behind the 9T. They're like, you know, see if you can follow that. But all these guys like saying this kind of stuff. And I was like, and I honestly on 9 didn't even hit a particularly good shot. I probably pulled it 4 yards, but it funneled off the left slope back in. And that was obscene when that went in. I didn't know what to think. And then, my brother was caddying for me. I thought that was funny because I feel like he was probably the only one who wasn't delighted because he was the one that like he was following that. And I was like, yeah, good luck with that one. So it was gas. And then I'm walking up and they were signing out, like they're called a group up behind, and Scotty Scheffler dunks it in on top of my ball.
Unbelievable. So like you had to pull Scotty Scheffler's ball out as you're getting your out.
I left it in there for him, but it was in on top of it. Yeah, it was.
Rare scenario. What should I do here?
Purposefully funnel pins is always fun, you know?
Throw it in the water for him. But no, it was amazing. It was like, that's such a unique experience that like the year before, like I don't have kids or anything yet, but like I was playing with Scott Stallings and Keegan Bradley, both of their kids out, and it's just nothing like it. It's just a blast. Everyone's in good form. Like, everyone's happy to be there. It's just amazing, and obviously to have like memories like that. And then they send, which is kind of a cool thing, they send you like crystal, but it's like so it's Waterford crystal, which is where I grew up in Ireland.
Wow.
So it was like I seen the boxes come in, so it was pretty special. Just I mean, everyone, like I get asked about it. It was like on ESPN top plays and this thing and that. So it was fun. It was just a, I don't know. It's different to normal hole in ones, and obviously the back to back ones was absolutely.
Your brother hit after you made the second.
He did.
Where'd he go?
He hit in the water. Unfortunately, he actually hit a pretty good shot, but it was tough to follow.
How nervous was he? I mean, I can only imagine if you're sitting up there cold turkey, right? I mean, you haven't swung all day.
So I have twin brothers, so it's funny. So like they did back to back years, and like they don't play a lot of golf, and then they're like carrying around. They're like, and one of them's like, I haven't hit a golf shot for like 4 months. I'm like, no, this is not a good place to start. But they both hit decent shots, but they're like, that's a tough one because there's just, as you said, water all around, and it's a lot of people. When you're not used to it, it's a lot of people around. So yeah, they had fun with it.
Since we're on this is a big debate on social media, so I'm going to ask you this. Do par 3 holes in 1 count?
I definitely counted them. Like, I remember someone asked me that interview right afterwards. I'm like, I get it, but I feel like they were long enough, or one was like 130 and one was, I think they were both like 130 or something like that. I do get the debate, but I'm definitely counting at Augusta. I think if I get it from 8 yards at Augusta, I'm counting it.
Well, I say this, I always ask people this, I'm like, how many times do you hole out from 80 yards? You know, if you're a 10 handicap, it's like once in your life, then count it. Yeah, if you made a hole in one from 80 yards on a short course, who cares? I'd say count it.
Yeah, like I was playing Pebble last week. If I get one of number 7 there, I'm definitely counting it. And that's shorter. Yeah. So I was like, I definitely did. I definitely did. Yeah.
What wedges do you bring to the par 3 contest? Or do you have to bring like a 9-iron? Or is it all wedges?
There is. I brought up to a 9-iron. I can't remember the exact. There is one hole that's like high 140s.
Okay.
Is it number 5-ish? It's really fun. Like, and they changed it up. The 2 years I've played, like, they completely changed it. It was amazing that we were able to do that. Like, the first hole was completely different. It was several holes that changed a lot. Yeah. So it was pretty cool. Like, the first hole is short, and then the third downhill is like 70 yards downhill, which is a very unusual distance for downhill. You look like you just throw it on the green. But then I think it's 4 and 5 are like little longer where you're hitting like 140, 150 yard shots. So I think I carried up to a 9-iron just to be sure in case it was into wind or something.
So your wedges, Seamus, you play a 58.
I
Have
do.
You ever used a 60? Did you grow up with a 56? How did you settle around 58?
I just liked it around the greens. I did, like, I had at 60 at one, I went the other way at 60, 56, 52, pitch, or probably 48, but it's, I like chipping with a 58 and it fits my set a little bit more. Like, the pitching edges have gotten stronger over the years, so, like, that gap between 46 and 52 is getting a little bit too big kind of thing. So it was like, I liked it, and then I much prefer chipping with a 50. I do most of my chipping with a 58. It's just right in between everything kind of, it just always kind of made more sense to me, instead of like swapping between 60 and 56 and all that.
Yeah.
So I liked that there. As soon as I was okay with that, then it made the gaps going through the bag just a little bit easier.
That's rare. I'm always curious if a player has gone from a 60 down to a 58 for greenside, and that's what you've done that.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I like it. It just gives you more.
Yeah.
Obviously, if one time you have to hit a flop shot, you've got to open it a little bit more, or whatever. Yeah. But I feel like my standard chip shot is just a little bit simpler with the 58.
So you go 58, then 54 bent to 53. Yeah, I think, right?
They're basically at that point all just fitting my yardage numbers. Yeah, because I do,
perfect,
as I said, I do most of my chipping with the 58. So my lob wedge goes 100 yards, and I want like that 54, 53 goes 116, and you know, like 130 and 145. So they match up to I feel like my pitching wedge with the set, like, dictates one end, and then the lob wedge dictates the other, and then you just basically try and match up.
Seamus, I love this, because we are with the new S159, we built this really cool wedge app that does the gapping, for the players.
Wow.
So they can do exactly what you've been able to do out here, you know, with the truck and the track man, and figure out your gapping.
Yeah, for me, it makes it so easy, because then the most you can be away from a full wedge shot is going to be 7 yards, 7-8 yards for me.
Yeah.
So then it's like, you just basically need one other shot with your wedges, which is that one in between, and you should be pretty set from all the way from 90 yards all the way from me to 145. So that's a big gap. We hit a lot of shots in that, and it's nice when you don't have to worry about too much about taking stuff off or this or that or
all
that.
Seamus, you played so well in the 2022 PGA Championship. I was reading some of your quotes after, and you were like, I wasn't that far off from getting in the playoff. It feels like that gave you a lot of confidence. Can you kind of go back to that Sunday after the great round on Saturday and just what you were feeling at, like, how were the nerves going into that final round?
I actually felt great because I can't remember what group I was. I was maybe fourth last or fifth. Like, I wasn't like right in it, but I wasn't too far away. And it was the golf course that was going to play. It played very difficult that weekend. And yeah, I had chances. Like, I look back, I had a very makeable like birdie putt on 9 from maybe 8 feet. A lot of break, but still one you're hoping to make. A 3-putt at 10. Like, again, it's a tough green, but I wouldn't have expected a 3-putt it. And then I had really good chances on, like, what is that, par 5, like 13. I flew it right over the top of the pin and only made a par. And I lipped out on 16, didn't birdie 17. I was like, there wasn't much out of a playoff in the end. It was like, damn, what could have been? But that's golf. And it was fun to be in. I hadn't played many majors at that point. So it was fun to kind of get into a position like that in a tournament. Like, there's definitely a different feel to them. I heard it from guys forever. They're like, you kind of our majors feel different even showing up on a Monday, and they definitely do. And that was a special week. I had a good run, like even in US Open, then not too long after that was another good run there. So yeah, it was some positive stuff. So hopefully I can kind of get back in there again this year.
Seamus, you're let's talk about your putter a little bit. You're playing the PLD 3, right?
Yeah.
And I'm in the office. Tony Serrano would always come in, and when you guys were working on that, and talk about the design, the nuance. You were super involved in the design of that putter.
Yeah, it was cool how it came to be. Like, I Tony was kind of, he was sending me like designs.
Yeah.
It was amazing, and he, like, some of the things he was able to do. I've always found all sort of little custom things. I'm slower on the stroke, so he's like put copper on the bottom
to
weigh a little bit more and all this. But I love the design, absolutely love it. And we designed it in the different hosel, so probably, I can't remember what number, it looks like the kind of the bend hosel.
Yep.
But then I saw that, like, the answers, I think that's the answer 4 hosel I have now, and I absolutely loved it. It's been ever since. I've gotten a few kind of variations, one like in the answer style head, and one even this week, the small catch head.
Yep.
But it's hard to get me out of it when I have. Absolutely love it. It makes, like, I love, I like the size of it where it's like in between. Mine's like, it's that whatever you call it. It's not the full size.
It's like a mid mallet.
Yeah, like, yeah,
almost a small mid mallet.
Yeah, right? It is. Yeah, yeah. It's not particularly deep, right? So it's very nice. And I always thought it looks cool as well. Obviously in the all black as well. And yeah, Tony did a great job with it. But it was fun to be involved on. I mean, I don't know how much he was taking on, but just even to see like which line he was able to show me what options there are and all that kind of stuff. And yeah, it came out really well. Absolutely loved it. That was. Yeah. I mean, that's probably six years ago maybe now. And yeah, it's pretty much been in the bag ever since.
Yeah, that was super cool. I remember him working on it in our CAD software, yeah. And then he'd send you screenshots and back and forth. And from our iPing data, that's our tool. We put you on, an iPod on your and measure your putting stroke. You mentioned it, but you've always been on the slow tempo ratio side. So our fitting logic there is that folks with a slower tempo ratio do better with a heavier putter.
Yeah.
So is that something you've kind of noticed just
it is
experimentally?
Yeah, it just feels, especially when you get to like, you know, it's like slightly longer. I've always been an excellent short putter, so I was just trying to add a little bit more to like mid to longer putts and just felt easier. It felt, you know, like if you get 40 feet with a regular weight putter for me, I feel like I'm taking it back to my waist to get it like long enough.
Yeah.
So like with the extra weight, it just gives you a little bit of help there where you kind of need it. But yeah, it's great. That one's a nice mix. I said it didn't affect my short one. It was excellent. I love the white line on top. It's clean and everything. And yeah, it was great. I was lobbying to have it called SP1, but didn't quite get it.
We'll get there. You know what? You win the Masters and then you really start to make your demands. I mean, I think that's the key. Yeah. You go back to kind of college days. You talk about a mixed bag. You know, you get this ping bag full of clubs, and then all of a sudden you play ping. And then you get to this point in this pro career where you help designing a putter. I mean, do you have these moments where you kind of sit back and go, A, I've made it, but B, this is pretty crazy from a kid from Ireland that's going to, you know, East Tennessee State or whatever, and now all of a sudden I'm helping make this putter that you can sell and go get?
Yeah, I mean, I try to remind myself not to lose perspective on stuff like, as it is pretty cool. Like the biggest moment for me always is with the ping stuff is when you go into the vault and you actually have, because I remember going in there in college and there was, you know, you're blown away by it.
For
sure. It's just like you're looking for your favorite player. And then like I have like some putters in there now, which is, that's when it kind of hits it home to me. But yeah, having the putter design was amazing. And yeah, I mean, like it's been a cool journey for me with ping. I said I switched that. I can't remember my freshman or sophomore year, and I haven't changed anything almost since. It's like it's been a really, really cool journey. And it's like Scott Sullivan, when I get to see him when I'm in the office and stuff, he's still in that position, which is amazing. Like it's like he's so good at his job, and that's like, I mean, the staff and everything is being, it's been amazing. I always say like my coolest thing that I can say about ping is like over the years is like when I was in college, you're treated incredibly well, and I feel like no matter, like I was at mini tours all the way, but you're still treated incredibly well. Like no matter what, if you're struggling, if you're playing well, they still treat you like incredibly well. It's amazing. The equipment is fantastic because you have like, you've had more and more guys go to like, I don't know what you're called, like free agent type deals now. And I was like people asked me if you thought about that. And I was like, if I thought I could find something better, maybe I would. But like, I don't think I, like everything I have is, it does exactly what I want it to do. So like, it's amazing equipment and it's been a great run.
Seamus, let's talk a little bit about your driver in your fitness training. You work with a friend of the pod, Mike Carroll.
I do, yeah.
Irish influencer here in the U.S. He's touching a lot of people with his fitness app.
Yep.
You use his app. But what are you doing on, you know, the fitness side or maybe like to the ball speeds side with your driver, right? You've lived in the high 170s.
Yeah, I have. I've been actually talking a lot. So, but at the moment I'm way down. I like hip issues. Like the second half of last year, everything feels great, but my speed isn't back yet.
Yeah.
So I'm working a little bit more on it. But yeah, like that was when I started with Mike in 2020, I think. And it was just talking to him, I loved his stuff. It's very simple. You're not like, it was like new kind of technology, new stuff where you're much more efficient in the gym with your stuff. And then obviously golf-wise, he was like, realistically, his job is like to keep you injury free and to then try, especially at my age, like this way I would have been like getting towards my mid-30s, where it's like at minimum you want to be keeping your speed, ideally maybe able to like pick some up if you can.
Yeah.
I mean, all the stats now show how much of a help it is. So yeah, doing a lot of stuff at the moment, like swinging like speed sticks and doing all this stuff, and it's just trying to get used to me moving, because probably from March, April last year, I was restricted like all year, and like, so I wasn't able to swing at full speed, and now my body kind of thinks that's full speed. So it's trying to work that back. But then obviously the West Coast has been horrible weather. So
I know.
It hasn't been the most like conducive to some speed. But yeah, it's a huge part of golf, you know, and you're trying to match that up with the equipment. And then like, and that's what's been so interesting with the, when I gained a little bit of speed with Mike first, and then like you have to tweak the equipment of all that stuff to strike.
Yeah.
All of a sudden it's like climbing a little bit too much with the extra speed and this and that. So it's a huge thing. You know, you see the stats with golf, every, you know, you can gain, there's a massive place you can gain if you have it in, if like if it's in there. So trying to get back to something in the high 170s, it's only like the low 170s at the moment. So it's frustrating, but it'll get there now once I get kind of fully healthy.
Yeah, that you bring up a good point that if a player picks up for like 5 miles an hour of club speed and you deliver it the same angle of attack, everything, you're going to spin the ball like 300 RPMs more. So you have to refit your driver.
Yep. Yeah, right? it is amazing. Yeah. I mean, that's obviously a big jump, but yeah, even a little jump, you can just see something different at react with the ball and kind of try to like balance them up. But when you get them in, when you really feel like you're swinging the well with some speed and the equipment's right, you can see a big difference, and that's when you see those like stats really help you out.
Yeah.
The crew was telling me your round with Radar at home was like the Pope coming to town. Like, it was crazy. People were coming out of the woodwork to say what's up. What's it like going home these days?
Yeah, that was a blast, actually. I'd never done anything like that. It was really fun. And it wasn't like the nicest day ever. And I wasn't sure really what to do, but he was like, he's obviously done it a lot.
Right.
Yeah, he's fun to be around. He made it such a great experience. But yeah, people coming out, I think they were trying to like limit some of the people because I mean, like I said, I grew up in a small town, so like something like that is not happening very often. And you know, that's the golf club I grew up in, and it's like I know I've known so many of those people for 20-25 years. So yeah, it was really fun. It was actually a lovely morning right before the Irish Open. Was it last year? So it worked out great. Yeah, it was fun playing because he's still well able to hit it and stuff. And yeah, it was a blast. I wasn't sure exactly how it would work, but I was glad he gave me a couple of mulligans and that kind of stuff. I was like, all right, thank God.
It's tape something. Yeah, we've gone through that as well.
Yeah, yeah.
I also saw you're a big reader. You're a history reader. So you're on the road. Are you watching stuff? Or are you reading stuff?
I probably mix it up. Like it's probably 50-50, but I do like reading a lot. Yeah, I read a lot of history stuff, all that kind of stuff. I'm reading a book, like the secret history of the world, kind of stuff like this, like going back a couple thousand years. So all this kind of, I like reading that sort of stuff. I don't read many novels and stuff anymore. Sometimes when I'm flying, I read novels, a little like easier reading, but if I'm just sitting like in the room, like I like reading more history stuff and all that.
So what are you watching right now?
Not really anything in particular.
Are you like a brain dead watcher? So like if you need to go to bed, you got an early tea time, are you trying to like dive into like some show that you've seen a million times?
It depends. Like late at night, sometimes I'll often put on like The Office or something.
American
like that,
or UK?
I actually have always watched the American one.
Really?
Yeah. James
just rolled his eyes, by the way. He's so annoyed at this.
I actually was late to both of them. I didn't watch any of them until they were all done on TV. So that's my one excuse. But yeah, it is funny when Ricky Gervais makes little like appearances in the American
one. It's so great. Yeah. It's just like such a little Easter egg. Yeah. You know?
And I'd always watch the American one first, and I started watching like the British one, and the first couple episodes are identical. It was really funny but after you've seen the American one, it's weird because then you picture like each character a certain way and all of a sudden it's different. But yeah, they're very funny. But you know, if I'm by myself, like again, I'll watch like docuseries, and they have like Netflix is brilliant for World War II stuff and all kind of interesting kind of stuff like that. So I'll usually, if I'm by myself, that's kind of what I'm watching.
You ever dive into golf history stuff? I mean, you got into that at all?
Not really, no. Like I've learned some, but I'm not great with that stuff. I didn't grow up around golf. Nobody in my family plays or anything. So I wouldn't, like I, you know, I remember it was such a huge deal when Tiger won the Masters in 97.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't have really known. Like it was only like when I like maybe 10 years after, I was like, oh, Mark O'Meara won two majors in 98. I was like, it was like 97 happened and nothing else happened like around
till like the Tiger slam. And then it was like, oh, he chipped in 05. Yeah, it's like following that career.
So I was like a little later to it. So I'm not as good with all that stuff. Obviously when, you know, in Faldo or someone like that, or someone from like Britain or home won, it was a big deal. But outside of that, it wouldn't be great with some of the stuff with it.
And you grew up playing junior golf, like against Shane Lowry and Rory was kind of coming up. Did you play against him? Where were you in terms of their level at the time?
So Shane was a late bloomer. Like, so Rory, I think I was 13 and Rory was, or was like 14 and Rory was 12. We were put on some like panel together and he was like, it was amazing straight away. Like everyone at 13, 14 is basically like, you know, hitting it out there and then chipping and putting, and that's how they kind of figure out the play. And he's over there with his cut down little blade irons and like hitting high draws, and you're like, we're looking at it. I mean, I'll never forget it. It's like it wasn't great conditions. He just like like he was like small. He had an ERC driver, cattle driver, cut way down. He was ripping these things, and it was so strange. But he was amazing right from the get go. Like in Irish golf, he was just, he would do things you just couldn't imagine. It, it just wasn't normal. Like he was just hitting driver down these fairways that everyone else is hitting 2 irons and 4 irons, and he's just like shipping it over this and that. So he was amazing from the get go. I remember always saying, like, I hope he makes it, because if he doesn't, like, none of us have a chance. But then Shane was later. Like, I wouldn't have met Shane until we were about 17, and then he got on like a Leinster team, which is a province in Ireland, and then he was put on the Irish national panel, and then all of a sudden you're like, well, this guy's amazing. And
he won the AM, right? Didn't he win the AM as, or you won the Open as an AM or something, right?
He won the Irish Open as an amateur, but he won the, like, in between, he won everything as an amateur. It was amazing. And it was just, it was just all of a sudden you're like, where does this guy just come from? So he was a little different, but immediately you could tell he was going to be special as well. And yeah, I mean, those guys have amazing careers, and it's been fun to watch, because I said, like, I've met them. Like, I've known them for so long, it's kind of been amazing. They've done so much for Irish golf. I mean, geez, Rory's going to go down as one of the best players ever, and it's just amazing to have seen him right from the start. It's pretty special. It still blows me away when I watch him hit the ball. It's just, it doesn't look like other people at all. It's amazing, and it's different level of stuff. But yeah, those guys, it's amazing how long they've been on tour now. Like,
well, Rory especially. Yeah, I mean, you know, like, you're going back to like 2009 and 2010 when you started to like win and compete, and then it's 2024 and he's still one of the best in the world. It's crazy.
Because I think his first year, and like, he got, like, turned pro in 07 after the Walker Cup, I think. Wasn't it somewhere around there? I mean, that's amazing. And I mean, even Shane, I think this is maybe like Shane's 15th year as a professional. Crazy. It's like, what in the world? It's amazing already years ago. But yeah, those guys have done so many amazing things. And yeah, it's been really cool to kind of watch and follow them as they've come up.
Seamus, what was your time like between college turning pro, and then you made it on tour, what, six, seven years later somewhere?
Yeah, so I got my, actually 6 years after I finished in college, I got my PGA Tour card.
What was that journey like? You know, mini tours, Corn Ferry.
And Marty, in one of the keys to a lot of these pros is, like, he won a lot. You know, like, if you kind of go through the resume, it seems like you kind of won on the different stages as you built up.
Yeah, I did. I mean, it was fun. Like, I wasn't, when I finished college first, then I was trying to figure out if I was going to go play in Europe, play in the U.S. Eventually decided on the U.S. to move back at the end. So graduated in, like, May or whenever it is, April, May in 10.
Yeah.
Moved back to Charlotte at the end of 2010. Because the it's not even around anymore, but the eGolf Tour was, and it was, I tried to tell people, like, it was a really well-run tour. Like, my first year, like, you'd get 30,000-35,000 for a win. It was, like, properly run. It was really, like, they did a really good job. So I went, you know, I started playing in 2011, and I mean, it just shows, like, I wouldn't have had a whole lot of money turning pro. Like, I remember my first tournament, I'll never forget, I always tell people this, is like, whatever it said, I think they might have been like Wednesday through Saturday. So, like, I booked my hotel to check out on Friday morning. It's like, I can't risk this $200 if I missed a cut. So I checked out.
That really boosts the confidence too.
But made the cut, like, and I remember thinking this is the greatest thing ever. Pulled back into the hotel, like, sitting in a car park, trying to connect to the Wi-Fi to book it on Priceline again. That's what you do in mini tour. You're trying to keep the expenses down. But I was very lucky. Like, the eGolf Tour was really, it was very strong. So I ended up playing that for 4 years. You know, I, like everyone else, I mean, who was like, my first, in 2011, like, I got through, I was at second stage, and Ben Curtis makes like a 40-footer across the 72nd green to stop me from getting through second stage.
Oh,
we both would have got through. Like, I didn't have a great last round, but I made like a 10-footer in the last, which I thought got me through. Like, when I got to the scores tent, they were like, we think that got you through. And then I see this putt, and you're like, walking the car to go to the airport. It's like, I hope that didn't
Please be for bogey?
Yeah. So if he two putts, we both go through. But anyway, don't go. And that was when it was, I guess the cards are back, but it was still like 25 PGA cards at that final stage. And Patrick Reed, like, was at that, like, stage. I mean, it was that same kind of timeline. And, you know, 12, I go to second stage. I think I missed by second stage by one or two shots again. I'm like, oh, God, this is terrible. 13, I go to first stage, get sick at first stage, finish, like, last. I'm not sure I broke 80 because I was like, I might as well try.
Yeah.
And then 14, like, I had a great year on mini tours, won multiple times, like, did all sorts of cool things. But then you're still going to Q school and you're like, oh, this needs to count. But yeah, Q school is a horrible, like, it's a tough tournament because you're worried about not playing, you're not worried about playing well, you're worried about not playing badly.
Right.
But we was at the PGA National, and like, it was six rounds, and I chipped it stone dead for birdie, and I was going to finish, like, it was, card was well locked up, but I was standing looking into the water, and I was like, geez, I was so relieved. It was just like, and I was like, I remember thinking, I was like, geez, I gotta do everything I can to make sure I never have to come back to this again. And I haven't been back to whatever that was 2014. So yeah, I got on the Corn Ferry, and then I had a rough start my first year on Corn Ferry, but then kind of got my feet under me, kept my full card, and then I won in 2016, and it kind of got me going and got my card into fall of 2016.
Marty, do you remember your first Minis Tour tournament?
Yeah. It was
what tour was it?
It was the Hilton Open in Socorro, New Mexico.
Nice.
Yeah, Socorro, New Mexico. Well,
how nervous were you and how'd you play?
I was pretty nervous because you're ponying up a lot of money.
Yeah, you are, yeah.
I'm splitting the hotel room with three other players. The high score sleeps on the floor.
Yeah, that's good. And, that's good.
But I turned a little profit. I think it was like $600 entry. I made like $950.
Nice.
I paid for the next entry fee.
I think I told you this. My first mini tour event was Pepsi Tour out here in Arizona. Yeah. And I made more money. I shot like 78. And I made more money on skins than the guy that won it. It was a mini tour tournament that had skins you could buy into.
I remember
that. And I made like two skins and won more than the guy that got first that day. And I was like, this is going to be a tough sledding. This is not going to be the easiest thing in the world.
Yeah, mini tours is not glamorous at all. It's tough going. It is tough going.
I like the high score sleeps on the floor.
Oh, yeah. We always did that. Yeah.
You got to putt over the last. They're like, how stressed were you? Like, I don't want to sleep on the floor. My back's hurting. That's what I'm worried about. Seamus, goals for this year, kind of what are you looking at as what you want to do and accomplish in 24?
Yeah, for me, it's going to be like start every year, it's going to be to get at least one win. I mean, there's nothing like winning. Like, I've been able to win twice, but it's just, yeah, there's nothing like that. So that's the one goes on the page first. And then for me, it's going to be get back in the top 50 in the world. So the injury second half of last year is kind of like, obviously wasn't able to pick up any points or whatever. And then the other big one's going to be get to the Tour Championship. You know, the last 2 years now I've been inside the top 30 going to the playoffs, and then I haven't played as well as I would have wanted. Mm. This last year, obviously, with the injury, and the year before, I just didn't play well. So it's like they're going to be my big three. Like, you know, there's a lot of little, you know, like statistical goals and stuff I have as well along the way, but they're going to be my big three that I'll be kind of, you know, looking at kind of regularly just to make sure I'm kind of heading in the right direction.
Do you have a golf course that's your favorite on tour?
TPC Sawgrass is hard to beat. Like, we're very lucky. We play so many, but there's something about, I feel like it's such a great test of golf. There's short holes, long holes. Like, you got to be able to draw it, fade it, do all these things. And I always think it's a great sign when you look through the past champions. There's some long hitters. There's some short hitters.
It's a great mix.
That's a good point.
I think that's a great sign of a course.
It's just who's playing. I mean, you really look at it, well. It's like who played well this week. It's not favoring. I mean, Rory's won there.
Yeah.
Tim Clark's won there.
You know? Exactly.
I mean, there's very, very different winners.
And I think it's a great sign of a course. But, I mean, we're just coming like from Pebble. You get to play here with Riviera next. I mean, we're spoiled. It's hard to pick one. Like, Riv is not an amazing one. But I think TPC Sawgrass to me is a great mix of everything. It's like intimidation factors, birdie chances, all these kind of things mixed in together. And obviously, it's the Players' Championship as well. You know, it's the one, it's the non-major one where everyone's looking to win. So I think that thrown in as well is just it's just an incredible combination.
Seamus, so you talked about some stats in your goals. Are you a big stats guy? Do you dive into them? Do you use them? Or are you kind of just lightly?
Somewhere in between. Okay. Like some guys are, it's so interesting. The statistical stuff on course, I don't use as much as other guys.
Yeah.
But I'm always monitoring my own stats to like pretty closely to know, because you could like golf is a really strange game. Like sometimes like you can come off a course and you're kicking yourself and you're telling your caddy, oh, you suck at this and stuff. And then you look at the stats and you're like, huh. Because for some reason, one shot you might have hit really annoyed you.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, it might cover up like three or four other poor shots that you don't notice because everyone's the same. Like, at least for me, it's like there's a certain miss that a player like will annoy a player. If you hit one of those, it'll cover up everything else. Whereas if you hit three or four, a miss that doesn't bother you, they almost can go under the radar.
Yeah.
But for me, then you're always, for like a good way of tracking like the wedges and like all that sort of like proximity to hold from certain yardages. It's a fun way to practice too. It's like I look at a tournament and or even how you are in the season. It's like, oh, I'm down in say 75 to 100 yards. So you just like extra little bit of time to practice that week, and then you kind of go like, you know, your next couple of hours, next off week I have, it's going to be okay. That improved a little bit. This one's down a bit. So then you and just kind of go through it, and you eventually get to all aspects of it, and it's. I think it's a big part of it now. I mean, they know so much. The on-course stuff to me is interesting because...
Like strategy.
Strategy.
Okay.
Because you see some of them and I can see what they're getting at. And they're not trying to get at anything. These are the stats. But they don't take into account like how a player sees certain holes. Like I was like Travelers... I mean, it's obviously very, like, but Travelers, the ninth hole of Travelers, like stats say hit driver. And I've stood there and I was like, you can't see anything. You don't know where you're hitting it. It's like, if I pull this, it's in true. Like, and it doesn't suit me at all because I've always played it. I played it very well, playing it the way I like to see it play. And stats are tricky like that. I like seeing the stats to see what they recommend, maybe trying it in practice and see if you like it or not.
Yeah.
Rather than, but I've also played with guys who just like, that's what they do. They're like, this is a strategy,
it
pull club,
do
go.
This, do it.
Very
yeah,
binary.
And they go.
Like a computer.
Yeah. Like, and some guys, it's the same like with the, you know, on the greens, obviously they've reduced it, but like the aim point stuff. Remember like the books from a couple of years ago,
yeah.
The exact numbers?
Yeah.
I played with Joel Dame, like I hope he doesn't mind me saying this, but like he on
we will not mind you saying
yeah,
it.
True,
whatever no. It is.
But we played at Pebble on and I was blown away. I don't think Gino or him read one putt all day long.
Just look at the book.
They were looking because you know they had it was so exact. They were like pacing it off and it was like this putt is this. And like he putted really well, and I'm like blown away because I don't really I like reading putts and stuff. I've always been a good putter, but I'm looking at this going, do I need to be adapting here or what? Like, what's going on? So you kind of look into do a bit of research with it and see where I use it a little bit now in little spots. But I think golf is very unusual. You have to sieve through a lot of stuff to find out what you like and what works for you and other stuff. Even though it might work amazing for certain like 10 other players, if it doesn't work for you, you have to get rid of it and find something that does work for you. So I use the stats where I think that they help me, and I look at them and I try analyze them and see where I can make improvements. Where I have made improvements and I can keep it there and do all that sort of stuff and kind of just monitor myself, basically.
I like that approach to on-course strategy. It's like the Daniel Kahneman book, Thinking Fast and Slow. It's like using stats to delay your intuition, right? So if you stand on 9 at Travelers, they might say, do this.
Like, send
this,
it.
This doesn't feel right.
It doesn't
feel
right.
You got to do what you got to,
yeah.
You know.
I mean, like the NFL playoffs. I mean, you think about earlier this year in the NFL playoffs and like, you know, the Lions had this strategy,
yeah,
which made sense for the regular season and the whole year. And then at some point you go, do you kick the field goal and go up 3 scores, right? I mean, yep. You know, analytically, what is it telling you to do? But you kind of got to like maybe potentially change it in certain situations.
Yeah, I remember like the Moneyball movie, they kind of go into that a little bit, 162 games into like a 5-game series. Do you change it and stuff? And I mean, it's forever. It's in all sports. I was watching that Dan Campbell, like, should he have gone? Should he have not? Yeah. And obviously, it's so you can't separate yourself from the results, because if they make it and get it, it's like this is what stuck to them all year. And then if they don't get it, all of a sudden, should they have changed it? But like, I mean, Greg Olson was commentating, and that's what he said. It's like they've done this all year.
Yep.
This is how it's gone. But it's like, I don't know. It's going to be a battle that will go on for a long time. And I'd say like the older coaches in every sport must be looking at it like cringing. But then you see these up and coming guys, and they say like they have that in the NFL. They have a book, and it's like
totally.
4th and 2 from this line. It's out of green light, red light. Yep. It's like you go. It doesn't matter, and that's statistically gives you a. And even so, do you see the stats for that? Them going for it. Increased their chance of winning from like 94.2 to 94.3. So technically, he was correct, but they lost the game. Like, so it's like,
look at Seamus is like the NFL analyst over here. Dan Campbell and Greg Olson. I mean, but, like,
yeah, it was just,
Gaelic football's out.
Yeah,
NFL is in.
Yeah, it was just when I lived in Charlotte, like Greg, I randomly met Greg on a night out.
Great guy, huh?
I didn't get to speak for long. He was just so big. I was blown away. But it was like, you know, I was always a fan of him from being in Charlotte and stuff. But yeah, it was just like stats. Like, that's the thing with stats. And every coach in every sport is going to swear by what they believe. And it's like, I feel like if you believe it strongly enough, it's probably the best strategy for you in a way. So it's going to be, but I'm sure they all use it behind the scenes to a certain extent. But it's going to be a long battle in sports.
Before we let you go, I saw that you're a Pats fan. Now, are you still a Pats fan? Because I know you're a Brady guy.
Yes.
So are you staying with the Pats, or are you moving on somewhere else?
So again, these things are filled out so long ago. I'm actually a Panthers fan. Because
gotcha.
when I moved to the U.S., the only team you would have heard of would be New England Patriots.
Yeah, because
that would have been 06.
Mm-hmm.
They were in the middle of winning everything. And then the NFL had, it's really very popular back home now, but it wasn't back then.
Mm.
So your favorite like American sports team is like, man, that's the only one I heard. Like, you would have heard of the Chicago Bulls. Like the Lakers, maybe the Knicks, the Patriots, not many, the Dallas Cowboys. Like, it wouldn't have been many teams. So I was like, I mean, oh, they're good. So let's put them out. But I'm actually a Panthers fan now.
Okay.
So I lived in Charlotte for 10 years. But like when I was in college and stuff, I was following the Patriots because they were the only one I kind of knew of. But then when I moved to Charlotte, I lived like, you know, a few hundred yards from the stadium, and it was cool. And so I became like a Panthers fan, and it hasn't been the best time for them. But
yeah, and this year wasn't great. Next year might get better.
Yeah,
we'll see how it goes.
See Bryce Young goes.
Well, Seamus, we really appreciate the time.
Oh, no problem.
Great chatting with you. Great kind of learning a bit more about you, not just as a golfer, but as a human. And hope you have a great year. Hope you stay healthy and hit it a lot longer. Good equipment. Be excited to see.
There you go. Thank you very much. Thanks for having me on.
That's Seamus Power. This is the Ping Proving Grounds Podcast.